Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, and Mike Grimm. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week, we hear from both sides of the fence on legalizing marijuana in Minnesota, a continued shortage of sports officials across the country. But first. It was a long, long road at the Minnesota Capitol for recreational cannabis to become legal in Minnesota next Tuesday. And MNN's Bill Werner is here to take a look back at how we got from then to now.
Tasha, as seems to be the case with many controversial issues at the Minnesota legislature, the push to legalize recreational marijuana had been underway for years. In early 2019, Senator Scott Jensen, later to be Republicans' candidate for governor, said,
"In terms of using it recreationally, I'm not going to stand before a group of people and say that's good for you. But I'm going to say that if it's legal, there can be a lot of benefits that come from that."
But at that point, Republican conservatives had a tight hold on control of the Minnesota Senate, and Majority Leader Paul Gazelka warned of
everything from distracted driving to homelessness to adolescent development to abuse are things that we should be looking at. At the same time this year, we're talking about increasing funding for opioid abuse, and suddenly we want to legalize marijuana.
The push for legalizing recreational marijuana built up steam in the early part of this decade when one of the top Democrats in state government, House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, launched a statewide campaign to actively promote it.
"Our priorities are to end the black market for cannabis and move to a safe, regulated marketplace where consumers know what they're getting."
Critics warned Minnesota's expanding medical marijuana program.
"For the people that are listening and want legalized marijuana, you're basically getting it right now through the back door. And I believe through the front door here pretty soon."
Prinsburg Republican Tim Miller, Minneapolis Democrat Aisha Gomez responded,
"This is not about legalization. This is about patients. This is about people who are suffering. This is about people who are in pain."
But a comment by then House Majority Leader Winkler seemed to confirm the strategy that Republican Representative Miller was warning of when Winkler said about medical marijuana,
"It's a significant accomplishment in the movement, not only towards legalization, but for patients to be able to access cannabis for health reasons."
Winkler held a series of public hearings across Minnesota to drum up support. But what really changed the dynamic was the 2022 election.
"There is no red wave, and we are coming. We are coming."
"We didn't have a red wave. It was a blue wave."
Analysts' jaws dropped when Democrats not only kept the governor's office, but held on to control of the Minnesota House of Representatives, which many thought they couldn't do. And Democrats grabbed a majority, albeit by only one vote, in the Minnesota Senate. And it didn't take long for them to stake their claim when it came to legalizing recreational marijuana.
"The governor reassured me that one of the first items that will be passed, Minnesota, get ready, cannabis is going to have its prohibition lifted."
Former Governor Jesse Ventura, bills introduced right at the start of the 2023 legislative session, supported by the Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman.
"It is critically important that Minnesota right some of the wrongs that have been inflicted on our population because of our prohibition policy."
"If this is really about racial justice, then the legislature should consider pivoting their focus to a decriminalization effort that is not contingent upon the full commercialization of THC."
Ryan Hamilton with the Minnesota Catholic Conference. Recreational marijuana advocate Marcus Harkus said if Democrats want to keep their majority in the legislature, quote, "they're going to have to get this done."
"A lot of independent voters, including myself, supported, you know, the trifecta because we knew that only the Democrats having majority control would get this done."
Bills to legalize recreational marijuana faced a daunting hearing schedule. 15 hurdles to clear in the Minnesota House, 13 in the Senate. Joan Barron told lawmakers medical cannabis helped her get off opiates after a traumatic fall.
"It's a damn miracle I didn't lose my life like so many of my other fellow pain warriors. They either lost their life to overdoses or suicide."
But Heather Backus told lawmakers her only son committed suicide at the age of 21 due to cannabis-induced psychosis.
"Our son is gone. I'm not here on his behalf. I'm here on behalf of your kids, grandkids, and our precious youth of today."
"My wife took the first 3 drops under the tongue and has not had a seizure since. None."
Former Governor Jesse Ventura telling one committee about his personal experience.
"I had to break the law. My friends had to send it to me."
There being 71 ayes and 59 nays, the bill is passed as amended and its title agreed to.
Madam Speaker,
we need to move on to the next bill.
Minnesota House passed the bill in late April, about a month ahead of the legislature's adjournment deadline, following debate that stretched over 2 days. Burnsville Democrat Jessica Hansen called cannabis prohibition a failed racist system.
It was put in place to intentionally harm Black and brown Americans. Prohibition has failed to keep communities safer than legalization can.
You stand with the advocates of cannabis. I am standing with parents who have lost their children, people who are in recovery, counselors and doctors who have given their lives for people who are fighting substance use disorder.
Maple Grove Republican Kristen Robbins.
We spent tons of money on ads to say no to smoking. We have a fentanyl crisis, meth crisis, cocaine, and then we're adding this into the equation.
Republican Jeff Backer from Browns Valley, bill sponsor, Coon Rapids Democrat Zach Stevenson responded.
In every state, everyone that has legalized cannabis, opioid overdose deaths have decreased.
A few days later, Anoka Republican Jim Abler said during Senate floor debate that he used marijuana a lot in college, and it's, quote, not a Cheech and Chong joke.
For my district, Mr. President, if I were to vote for this, it would be popular. But, Mr. President, I didn't come here to be popular, at least in this regard. I came here to be responsible.
But bill co-sponsor, St. Paul Democrat Senator Claire Umu Verbaten said,
we owe this to the people who have been impacted the most by this prohibition. It's our communities of color. It's Black Minnesotans. It's especially Black men.
34 ayes and 33 noes. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
It took House and Senate negotiators a few more weeks to hammer out a compromise, and then, just before the end of the legislative session.
The day has finally arrived. If you're so hell-bent on going over that cliff, fine, let's go over it.
I can tell you what it's like to be put through hell as a parent. I can tell you what it looks like to see your kid completely strung out on drugs and unrecognizable and lost and empty.
The best way that we can protect our kids from access to cannabis is by legalizing and regulating.
We've worked so hard to help people get out of addiction, and now we're just opening up the back door again.
In every single state, every single one that has legalized adult use cannabis or medicinal cannabis, opioid overdose deaths have decreased significantly, and those decreases have been durable.
And about a week after the final gavel came down on the 2023 legislative session.
Legal. There you go.
Governor Tim Walz signed into law the bill making recreational cannabis legal in Minnesota this August 1st.
This has been a long journey with a lot of folks involved. What we know right now is prohibition does not work. We've criminalized a lot of folks who are going to start the expungement process on those records.
Former Governor Jesse Ventura, an advocate for legalizing cannabis during his term in the late 1990s and early 2000s, among those watching Walz put pen to paper.
I think at that time, Governor, if I'm not wrong, we would have become the second or the third state instead of the 23rd had we listened to you that time. I think we were on the front end.
The bronze medals.
So we're here.
I don't look back at a legacy and say Jesse Ventura. I was a spark that brought a thought to the table, and it took many years of diligent work by legislators, governors, Governor Walz especially, to reach this point today. So I'll end it by saying this. Jimi Hendrix is looking down on Minnesota smiling today.
Thanks, Bill. Time for a quick break. More Minnesota Matters after this.
So you see, son, good manners are very, very important. Someday, many years from now, when you're a grown-up, you'll be a man. And when you are, you should be a gentleman. Do you want me to go through it one more time?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open for ladies. If a door shut, then knock first. Don't burp, don't swear, don't speak with your mouth full, don't reach across people's plates, keep your elbows off the table.
What table?
And don't interrupt. While we're at it, don't stare, don't use foul language, don't call people names, but do remember people's names. Always share your toys, play nice, and cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. On the bus, give up your seat to anyone who has trouble standing. Bottom line, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Post-parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Recreational cannabis becomes legal in Minnesota on Tuesday, and a lot of folks will be celebrating. MNN's Brent Palm talks with the head of Minnesota Is Ready Coalition about the final push to end cannabis prohibition in the state.
Laylee Fatahi with, I know the group is called Minnesota Is Ready this year. I think we talked to you a couple years ago when the group was called Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Legislation. On Tuesday, Minnesota becomes the 23rd state to allow the use and cultivation of cannabis. How excited are you folks that we got here finally?
We are so excited that we've gotten to this point. It was a long time in the making. The grassroots efforts towards legalization in Minnesota have dated back to the 1960s, and we were really seen as one of the states that was not likely to legalize, you know, for a while. So we are very excited that we were able to get this done.
I know that former Governor Jesse Ventura was here for the bill signing in May, and he was proposing this 20-plus years ago, but like you said, the push goes back many, 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 many years. The measure passed the Minnesota House in 2021, but was blocked by Senate Republicans. The vast majority of people I've talked with, interviewed, and all the polls have shown that legal cannabis is a very bipartisan issue. Why did it take till 2023 at the state capitol to get something passed?
So Minnesota, unlike most states that have legalized, doesn't have ballot questions. If we had a ballot question where people could sign a petition and then we put the issue on the ballot and people vote on it in November, Minnesota likely would have legalized years ago. But we didn't have that option. We had to pass legalization through the legislature. And Minnesota, for many years, had a split legislature. And you know, the Republican leadership just would not even give the bill a hearing, quite frankly, let alone pass it. So the way we were able to finally pass it this year was Democrats were able to win control of the Senate with a one vote margin. And so, yeah, that was the pathway towards legalization here.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Missouri is a very conservative state and voters there last November approved recreational cannabis. And so, yeah, you make a good point that a ballot measure might be different. And it seems like it might be a right-leaning thing, you know, less government control, a personal freedom issue.
Absolutely. You know, we can trust adults to make responsible decisions about products that they choose to consume. And especially when the product, in this case, cannabis, is objectively safer than both alcohol and tobacco.
One of the things that fueled this, and I heard several people testify during the hearings, there were some racial differences. Many of the testifiers said that Black Minnesotans and other minorities were more likely to be charged with a marijuana possession crime.
That is going to change. Yes, that was a major motivating factor in pushing this legislation and getting it passed. In Minnesota, Black Minnesotans were 3 to 8 times as likely to be arrested and charged for cannabis crimes, despite basically identical rates of usage between Black and white Minnesotans. So cannabis and cannabis crimes have been used as a pretext for over-policing in communities of color. It has had absolutely devastating impacts because, you know, these crimes create the situation where people can't get home loans, they can't get a car loan, it makes it difficult to get a job, it creates problems in custody suits and things like that. The implications are very far-reaching, and we're looking forward to pushing Minnesota's market in a direction that helps to redress some of those disparate impacts.
Former Minnesota House Speaker Ryan Winkler, when the bill passed in 2021, he was very passionate about expunging the records of nonviolent marijuana offenders.
Correct. So under this legislation, I mean, the day it went into effect, the process of beginning automatic expungement of criminal records for non-felon cannabis crimes began. It's going to take a while just because, you know, those records are not all kept in a central database. And so they need to make sure that they're being complete and expunging those records and informing people. But in addition to that, folks that have more complicated arrest records or, you know, felony level, the law also sets up a cannabis expungement board that will review people's, you know, more complex criminal records and either expunge or resentence.
Hey, some of the critics of legal cannabis, they're warning that it's going to be the Wild West for the next year plus, because as of August 1st, Minnesotans will be able to use and cultivate cannabis, but the retailers and dispensaries won't be open until sometime in 2025. What do you think of the Wild West predictions?
I think one thing that's important to note is that prohibition was not stopping anybody from consuming cannabis to begin with. So all that making the possession and the use legal on August 1st does is it eliminates the criminalization of something that we as a state have now decided should not be a criminal activity anymore. So in terms of, you know, people's usage, that doesn't really change anything.
That's another question. I know some of these lawmakers have said, this isn't your grandpa's cannabis or this isn't Woodstock's marijuana, but with state regulations, we're going to be able to label things like THC counts and potency.
Absolutely. Consumers are going to have a lot more information about what it is that they're purchasing, how potent it is. They'll be able to get that education on responsible consumption when they are going into a store that is staffed by people that have that knowledge. And also the law creates an Office of Cannabis Management. This becomes the regulatory entity for overseeing this marketplace. That's the purpose of setting up this regulatory apparatus, is to make sure that it is responsive to new information, new changes, to keep people safe.
Layli Fatahi, thanks a lot for joining us today and providing some perspective from the folks who have been pushing for this law change. Maybe we will check back with you later this year for an update to see how legalization is shaping up.
Absolutely. I'd love that.
Thanks, Brent. More Minnesota Matters after this. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. Not everyone is supporting August 1st when cannabis becomes legal in Minnesota. Joining me today is Lydia Bird, Director of Clinical Services at Hazleton Betty Ford, discussing health and addiction disorder concerns.
August 1st, cannabis becomes legal in Minnesota. And, you know, I guess just because it's legal doesn't mean it's necessarily safe. And I know you folks are really wanting to get that message out there, especially for teens and young adults. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And thank you for asking. Marijuana is part of the picture for, I would say, the majority of our young patients, mainly. And there is a perception and a continually growing perception that it is not harmful or that there are no negative effects of marijuana use. But that is not the case. Marijuana use can lead to a much higher prevalence of, you know, developing mental health issues such as depression or anxiety. There's research to suggest that using marijuana with a developing brain can inhibit brain development, and it can also prime the brain for developing a substance use disorder overall. And our patients often are not only using marijuana as well, which just kind of goes to show how it can prime the brain for developing substance use disorder and how it can be part of the picture to a much bigger problem as well.
You talked a little bit about the brains developing how long does it take for, I guess, a brain to fully develop?
The studies that I'm referencing are related to marijuana use under the age of 25 and how that can derail development of the prefrontal cortex.
All right. And, you know, you talked also a little bit about substance abuse disorder. And, you know, back in the day, I remember doing stories in my earlier years that marijuana is often a gateway drug. Does that still hold true?
I hesitate to use the term gateway. I think it is part of a much bigger picture for people. It may or may not be the first chemical that somebody uses or the first thing that they experiment with. I would say that altering a person's mind or using mind-altering substances is often an attempt to medicate or self-manage some other thing that's going on, whether it's anxiety or depression or a history of trauma. And then it can become a really vicious cycle where a person is using those substances in order to self-manage those symptoms. However, the substance use is actually making those symptoms much worse for them in return.
You continue to see people there at Hazleton, Betty Ford, come in, you know, for treatment for marijuana.
We see a lot of what we call polysubstance use, meaning that people come in and they've maybe been using several different substances or several different mood-altering chemicals, and marijuana is often one of those. So it may be in addition to benzodiazepines or opiates or alcohol or all of the above.
With the marijuana, you know, new law going into effect August 1st, any concerns that pop up in your head as we head closer to that date there at Hazleton?
My main concern with the new laws going into effect in August are the increase in access and the increased potency of today's marijuana, the lack of studies that sort of show maybe more long-term effects of the increased potency. A lot of people have gotten the impression that using marijuana is actually helpful in treating mental health symptoms and issues, and that's not the case. There isn't studies to show that. There's no regulation as it relates to dosing or amount or route of administration, which really means that people are just kind of shooting in the dark based on what they think is best for them, which is not medically recommended. And I think that the legalization of marijuana sort of legitimizes the use of marijuana. So we could be seeing a lot more people trying this out and sort of falling into a pattern of substance use disorder.
All right. Well, those are the key questions I had today, Lydia. Anything else you wanted to add?
If you could just add in, you know, if anybody is struggling or you're worried about a loved one, to visit hazelandbettyford.org for information and resources.
All right. Well, we'll help spread the word, Lydia, and I just thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thanks again to my guest, Lydia Bird, Director of Clinical Services at Hazleton Betty Ford. More Minnesota Matters after this.
You, my friend, have connections in the government. Yes, you. USA.gov, the official source for government information on thousands of topics. And like any good connection, there's no telling where it can take you. Why, one day you're getting student loan information. Next thing you know, you need job hunting tips. Today's road construction info could have you searching for telecommuting ideas tomorrow. The more you use USA.gov, the more uses you'll find for it. Passport applications, for example. They've been known to lead to a sudden interest in travel advisories. Our new mobile apps will even update you on the go. So whether you have information to get or ideas to give your government, check out USA.gov. Who knows? Lottery results today could lead to retirement planning tomorrow. USA.gov. With the right connections, there's no telling where you can go.
There has been a problem with a shortage of sports officials across the country, especially in youth and high school referees. Eminem Sports Director Mike Grimm spoke with the supervisor of Big Ten officials, Bill Carollo, who addressed the topic.
People look at it, looks easy, sitting in your chair at home, and that's a catch, and that's not target. You know, people are making opinions, so it's hard to get people in there. It's a tough business. I mean, it looks great if you're a head coach someplace making a lot of money, but it's a tough. They have a tough job too, and officials have tough jobs. So when they get into it, to your point, they might last 3 years, and they good chance, a high percent will quit before they won't get to the third season. You know, after 2 years, they say I've had it. They move on, and a lot has to do not with so much the pressure. It's just it's the fans. Number one, we don't pay at the lowest level really well. So it's their time commitment. So the new people, the young people today, they've got other things that, you know, two incomes, they're both working, they got kids. I mean, a lot of things, and we try to get them when they're young, as after they finish playing football, for instance. We try to get them coming out of college. And even sometimes we get them beforehand with intramurals or different levels. But, we, you know, if you had a pool of people, a few hundred people in the Midwest to pick from, today it's probably a third less of people to pick from. We're fortunate enough at the Big Ten that we have a lot of people applying that would like to come in the Big Ten from coast to coast, because that's where we're headed as far as a conference is concerned. But when I look at some of my Division III conferences, Division II conferences, the people I talk to with regard to high school officials, that's where we start the recruiting, you know, trying to move them up the ladder. And the reality is there's just way a third less people to pick from. And then they do, you know, very seldom when they get past that third year. So it's really difficult. I see it affecting at all levels because it's a thankless job, but someone's going to do it, and we're always going to have officials. AI is not going to replace every one of us. Even replay didn't really add, actually replay added more jobs for people to look at. We're trying to get it right, but it's difficult, and I always say, well, why don't you try it? You know, if you think it's so easy, why don't you should just try it and see what happens.
Right.
It's a lot more difficult. You know, it's harder than playing golf. It's harder than raising kids. For me, it was the hardest thing I ever did, you know, is to get the calls right.
Yeah, and the game moves fast, and there's lots going on, and there's big guys and fast guys and split-second things. And I know in Minnesota right now, because of the shortage of high school officials, I think it's almost every team has to play a game on a Thursday or a Saturday because crews and guys that are working will work a Thursday and a Friday game
exactly.
now, or a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday game now, because there's not enough to cover every game on a normal high school night. Parents and coaches, that's been part of it. You mentioned maybe that I'm only going to do it 2 years because I just don't want to put up with the hassle. How do you try to coach young officials through putting up with it or trying to lessen it? And how do we coach parents and coaches to behave better?
Yeah, there's a couple programs out there that are addressing the parent side of it. And I think that's a really good program, and it gets their attention. Now, can we really control the people in the stands at a Little League game all over the country, or a soccer match or a basketball tournament? It's hard to change society's opinion because they think they can sit in their basement and tweet anything out or say anything and have an opinion on it. So, but we're putting programs together to try to talk to the teams and talk to the coaches, and the coaches say, listen, give a lecture to the parents before the season starts. That does help. It really helps quite a bit. So that's one thing. And then trying to find the right person with the right temperament, personality. We do a lot of training with psychologists to take a look at people when they come in. We test them to see if they match up with my top Big Ten or NFL officials. What does that person look like, you know, as far as personality and the teamwork? And, you know, and a lot, you know, just intellectually, will they fit? Can they read the rules and apply the rules? And under pressure, can they do that? So there's a lot of things we look at. It isn't just like, oh, you're an ex-player, you're going to be a good referee. Well,
right.
That's not the case. It doesn't correlate. And especially if you're really good on the field, doesn't mean you're going to be a great replay official. It's a different skill set, too. So there's different attributes that we look for in getting officials, and we try to get them early, Mike, to make sure that, you know, and try to show them, here's a career path that in X number of years, you could be in the Big Ten, you could be in the Rose Bowl, you could be in the NFL. And I said, you know, I'd like to show them that success and giving everybody an opportunity, not just because they were a great college or high school player. If they have the right attitude, they can be successful. And we've done a nice job with my lower levels that feed into the Big Ten, giving them people opportunities and see how they do it.
That's Big Ten Director of Officials Bill Carollo with eminent sports director Mike Grimm. Those two attended Big Ten Football Media Days in Indianapolis, Indiana earlier this week. You can hear part two of that interview in next week's Minnesota Matters. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station. Same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel.